From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of PDGA Radio. I am Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, how's your day going on this beautiful July afternoon?
Well, I got stung by something on Saturday.
You don't know what? A jellyfish?
Okay, it was on land, so I can
something
narrow it down.
Bee family?
Something in the bee family, a hornet, a yellow jacket, a bee, I don't know. Like 30 seconds after I got out of my car to go play a round, and I was like, oh, okay, that hurt. Gonna take the stinger out. Play my round, did some kayaking, and then later that night, my ankle and foot were huge.
You got one of those Africanized bees. Yeah, I've had that before.
Yeah, well, it still looks kind of like a marshmallow.
Yep.
So we'll see how all that goes for me. Hopefully I don't have to amputate.
I think you'll be okay. It takes
very,
a few
very days. Itchy.
All right. You should be all right.
And well, I don't do well on Benadryl. I'm a baby. It hits me hard.
Well, you don't sound very Benadryled up for this show, so that's probably
not
a good
right
thing.
Now. Maybe that's right good. After.
That's a good thing. Well, yeah. I hope you feel better, and we'll get you out of here soon so you can have some Benadryl. So we've got we've got some stuff to talk about on the show. We're going to have Dave Fellberg on to talk about his win at the Pro Masters World Championship. Congratulations. He is back champion. We'll run down some more Masters World action in a minute. We're going to talk Discraft Great Lakes Open at the end of the show. That's going down this weekend. Sarah, quick prediction. Does Paul McBeth shoot another 18 under par round? Yes or no?
No.
Oh, he's going to do it now because he's listening and he heard you say no.
But did you hear how I said it? It wasn't like an immediate no. It was like a no. There's
all
struggle.
I asked was if there's he was going to shoot 18 under. He could eagle something and go 19 down. Anyway, we'll talk Discraft Great Lakes Open. And then the one big thing, though, going on right now is PGA Board of Directors elections are finally underway. We've been talking about it for weeks. Elections are going on. The ballot should be in your inbox if you are a PGA member. If you did not get that email, you can do a couple things. Make sure it's not in your spam folder. Make sure you are actually a current member as of June 30th, and make sure that you left a good email with us on file. If you have not received it after all those steps and still want to vote, please email memberships@pdga.com. You can, we'll get you a ballot, and you can, you know, democracy in action with the PDGA yes. Board of Directors. And if you want to learn more about the candidates, you can read about that on pdga.com or listen to our special elections episode from last week where we talked to all six of the candidates. Sarah, did you get tired of hearing me ask the same question six times?
No, I feel like you asked them in a little bit. You frame them in a little bit different way each time.
I can only ask the same question so many times. I gotta change it up a little bit.
That was good. And I really liked the questions that you created specifically for each person. I thought all of those were really good.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I mostly just wanted to hear their... Look, I know the walk-up music song might have... Or the question about walk-up music might have sounded a little goofy.
No.
But I am a firm believer that you can tell a lot about a person by the type of music they choose.
100%. I thought that was great. And you prefaced it with like, this is the hardest question.
Yeah, and, it is.
It was the hardest. Yeah, for some people, it really was the hardest question.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tone setter, right? It's a tone setter.
Can I tell you?
Yeah, what's your walk-up song? That's what I want to know.
So it changes. It's been Bob Marley's Three Little Birds for a couple of years. But this year, for the Music City Open in a few weeks, I have decided to walk up to the original Tetris music.
I love it.
I don't think anyone's ever done that before. So
why would you be doing that?
I am horrible at video games, except for Tetris. I'm highly skilled. And I still play, like, we have the original Nintendo, but we just got the mini NES a few months ago and have been going hard on the Tetris front. So it's always stuck in my head.
I love it. Tetris is a classic. Exactly. My wife tells me the stories of when she was a child and would play Tetris so hard that she wouldn't blink, and she would literally she would be like crying looking at the screen because she just wouldn't blink because she didn't want to lose her spot. Yeah, she's dedicated.
Yeah.
We don't let her play Tetris anymore.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, we don't do
that. I need to go to rehab.
Yeah, no, she's okay. Yeah, the walk-up music is important. So good. I'm glad to hear that you've got a fun one.
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's talk about Masters Worlds, Sarah. It took place up at Smuggler's Notch last week. And we have Dave Fellberg and Elaine King, the MP40 and FP40 champions. We have a whole host of champions who we can and should congratulate. It might take us a little while because there were a lot of divisions.
There were.
Yeah,
we've got the, instead of 40s, well, instead of the 10-year age gap.
It breaks it down into fives.
The fives, yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get over 50.
Right, right. So, but that's okay. So yeah. In Pro Masters 50, we had Ron Convers. I believe that might have been his third title. So congratulations, Ron Convers. Mitch McClellan took down Pro Masters 55 plus. Pam Reinecke took down Pro Masters Women 55 plus. Dave Greenwell won his flobbity jillionth world championship.
That's anywhere.
And I should probably know the exact number, but he's won a lot and he's played a lot. I think he has a streak going. I think at Pro Worlds, it will be like he has played every Pro Worlds, even.
All of the Pro Worlds. Wow.
He's a legend. PDGA number 962. So congratulations, Dave Greenwell. Lori Cloyes-Chupa in the Pro Masters Women's 60 Plus division. Johnny Sias in the 65 Plus division. I believe that went to a playoff between him and Alan Beaver. Dr. Rick Vokes took down yet another championship. Pete May and his cowboy hat took down another Pro Masters 75 Plus. And then in Pro Masters 80 Plus, Carlos Rigby. Whew, I'm going to take a breath because that is a lot of world champions. Congratulations to all of them. Must have been that's a pretty nice place to win a championship, Smuggler's Notch.
Oh, yeah. I would love to win a championship there. It just has all the good vibes.
I would love to win a championship in the dumpster down the street from my house, but I would also love to win a championship as well.
A dumpster diving championship?
Well, I meant like a disc golf championship.
Oh, okay.
It just happened to take place in a dumpster for some reason. Okay. Don't question me. No. So anyway, it's been a long day. I'm sorry. I'm a little punchy, but we had some coverage from the event, Sarah. What did you really take in and see out of what coverage you've seen so far? The rest of it, as of this recording, hasn't come out yet. It is coming from Central Coast Disc Golf for people who do want to see more of the FP40 and MP40 divisions. But what did you have a chance to take in?
I have determined that Steve Rico is like a putting god.
You just now determined that?
I really haven't seen him play too much. I mean,
yeah, he hasn't there in like the video era. Yeah. He hasn't been on video quite as much in like the more common video era.
We haven't crossed paths a whole lot. Like at some of the world championships in the past couple of years, yes, but so he's amazing. And then Dave Fellberg just kept it so consistent, even during round one when it was horrible conditions. So actually the funny thing was I was trying to look at like why Fellberg took the win. Of course he's really good at disc golf, but yes. There wasn't one single round that he really killed it except for the final nine where he shot a 25 and the nearest score after that was a 31. But really he just kept it really consistent. Actually the rating points were all within like 10 of each other for over each round. And they all kind of swapped back and forth over who had the hot round. Like not one single player had two hot rounds, unless you count the final nine, of course.
I'm gonna spoil the interview coming up with him a little bit, but I think a lot of it came down to, according to him, down to just kind of playing smart golf, like on the longer holes, not trying to go too big and bite off more than you can chew, just playing smart, like smart golf, old guy golf.
Yeah, that's what you need. Like, so I was just watching the coverage from round four on Fox Run, and that's what they were referencing. They were like, man, old guy golf, just not, like, this is pretty different from what you'd see on the MPO side. Just like, well, this is actually pretty similar to what you'd see on the FPO side.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
That was,
and look, and that's golf. Like golf is placement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if we're equating golf, and I know, you know, there's plenty of people who say, oh, you know, disc golf is newer and it's younger, it's modern and hip, and we shouldn't be comparing to golf and blah, blah, blah. But look, it's golf. And in golf, you don't park every hole. You play placement shots and then you putt.
Exactly.
And that's kind of how this style of play
Well, both of these courses, I mean, Fox Run is, it just runs rampant with OB. There's tons of out of bounds. If there wasn't, I think I said this last year when I played it for Pro Worlds, if out of bounds wasn't there, the course would be super simple. But it's not. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
Even, like, dog legs made with OB ropes, and it's all about placement. You can't go too big off the tee, and you just have to play it safe. And then,
for some people in the MPO division, that can actually be troublesome.
Oh, for sure.
It's why you saw a guy like Greg Barsby, who, you know, Greg Barsby doesn't bomb. He can throw plenty far,
yeah,
but he's not. He doesn't have to dial back his 600 feet.
Yeah.
To get it in bounds.
Well, and then also on that course specifically, the wind really comes into play if there is high wind. So if you have a safe kind of strategy going into it, the wind shouldn't really affect that. It's not like you plan on bombing this hole, but if the wind is a certain way, then it's not going to work and you're going to go out of bounds. Like, if you just play for your par or play for your birdie and just play really conservatively, then I feel like the wind is becomes less of a factor.
Yeah, I mean, it's, the wind was up too. There was a video from the first day, I think, that Marty put on the PDGA page. It was borderline like GBO wind putt style,
where
it went up and then kind of came back toward the player putting. And it was the first day, the conditions there were abysmal. I guess like some of these guys who've been playing for years were coming in saying it was the worst conditions they've ever played in.
Yeah.
Between rain and wind and everything like that, it was just bad. And then it was nice the rest of the tournament, from what I gather.
Yeah, it looked beautiful during round four. Yeah.
But you get out on an open course with some wind out there and it's something else.
Oh yeah, definitely. I assumed that Barry Schultz would have a little bit better of a showing, and just some of the stuff that was happening round four, for some reason he was leaving a lot of his putts short. And I'm not sure exactly what range they were, maybe 20, 25 feet, and just hitting like front of the cage. So I'm not sure if he was really feeling the putter that fourth round, and shot well below his rating, but it looks like he came back very strong during the semifinals and the finals, but just could not catch Dave.
Yeah.
And then Johnny McRae, we talked about last week, because I think we put our episode out the first day of the event.
The first day of the event, yeah.
Yeah, he was really sick and considering dropping out.
Yep.
So he didn't have a great... Actually...
He was like in the lead early.
Yeah. He had a great second round on Fox Run. His first round on Brewster Ridge was not too bad, actually, considering his rating. But his third round at Brewster Ridge really got him. He shot a 991 rated.
I mean, Brewster Ridge is hard because you get off the fairway there and you're...
Oh, gosh.
You're done.
And there's out of bounds in the woods. So you're, like, extra punished on some of those holes.
Right.
And I don't want to say it's a luck course. It's really not. In my experience playing it, there are really fair fairways that are obvious to hit. But I feel like sometimes there is an element of luck because there are a lot of trees. You could be sailing way out of bounds and hit a tree and just pop back into the fairway.
Oh yeah, there were a couple shots I saw where it was just the kick, like two people would throw back to back and one would kick spray. I mean, it's just like any woods golf. I feel like I'm just saying anything you'd see on a woods golf tournament.
Except
I think maybe we just haven't seen as much woods golf yet this year. But yeah, the out of bounds does play a factor.
Yeah, like that rock wall that comes into play on several holes.
Right.
So, but yeah, I thought it was pretty exciting. I wasn't really sure who was gonna take it down.
Spoiler alert: since you haven't seen the final round yet, it's Dave Vellberg.
Yes.
Just so you know. What about on the... I know we don't really have any video coverage out of the women's side yet on the FP4E division, but Elaine King pretty much took this one after round two and kind of ran off with it.
Yeah.
No, not terribly surprising result there to me. She ended up winning by 15 strokes plus 27, 27 over par, but I think like 24 of those might have come in round one.
Yeah.
When they were, I think the women were out at round, were they out at Fox Run? Yeah. Okay. So the women were out at Fox Run the first round. Elaine King went 24 over par that first round. The wind, rain, terrible conditions. And then the rest of the tournament went 3 over par.
Yep.
That's awesome.
She made a Facebook post that was like, I don't think I have ever said this in my entire career, but I cleaned up 20 strokes from playing Fox Run, or, you know, from one course one day, playing the same course another day. 20 strokes.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And the funny thing,
I mean, I'm looking at her. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm looking at the live scoring from round one, and from hole 7 to 13, she put together an 8, a 6, a 5, a 4, another 2 6s and a 5.
Yep. And that was all weather, because
yep,
her round one, she still shot 939, which is her rating. Like, yeah. I saw those ratings, and I didn't compare them to my rounds out there last year, because I'm not entirely sure if they played the same tees as we did last year.
I don't think they did. I think they were playing shorter tees this year. Yeah.
Okay. But I was like, man, like, they shot an 87 and it was still rated almost 940. That's crazy. But it's just because of the crazy weather out there. So
yeah,
she and everybody else kind of bounced back from that terrible first round in the elements. And she also shot a really hot final round. They didn't have a semifinal, just went straight to the final nine. She shot 30, which was two strokes better than the next score.
Seven strokes better than the next score. Oh no, there was a 32. So it was that lower in the standings.
Yeah.
I mean, really strong turn from her. We got to see Sue Stevens got an ace on video. So that was great.
Yeah. Hole one.
Yeah. So really, it was good to see, I think there are some times, and look, we're guilty of it on this show, and I think everyone who follows along with disc golf is guilty of it, where we get so wrapped up in the MPO, FPO fields that we kind of forget that there are still some really amazing players that were not too long ago in the MPO FPO fields and could still play in the MPO FPO fields and still do. Elaine is a perfect example of that. Feldberg hasn't been playing as much this year. He's currently signed up for Pro Worlds. We'll see if he ends up playing it. That's more to come on that in the interview. But I mean, he's played open in the past. Steve Rico just came up, but it's almost like they're not throwing 600 foot hyzers, but they've developed some really strong just tactical play, which I think is actually really important to watch. And like, especially for someone like me, I don't throw far, so I kind of enjoy being able to see someone dissect a course that would be a little more closer to my skill level, where it's like, oh yeah, I'll go out and I'll try the occasional stupid Simon Lazat shot that I know I can't do because I just can't, but it's fun.
Yeah.
But I know that I should play within myself a little more. And that's what players in this age range are doing a little more. They're playing within their skill set a little more instead of trying to push to a level that they know they shouldn't. And it's fun to watch that way. I think it's instructional.
For sure. I also want to give a shout out to my friend Sandy Gast. She placed fourth in the FP40, and she's 62 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. She killed
it. That's awesome.
And she shot every round. I didn't run the numbers or anything, but she shot every round over her rating, like quite a bit over her rating.
That's great.
So, shout out to you, Sandy, and Pam, of course, for winning her division.
Thank you again to the crew at Smugs, Jeff Spring, and everyone up there for playing host to another world championship. Good times. And we have another world championship coming up like next week already, Sarah. Junior Worlds coming out in Emporia.
We do.
We're creeping up on it.
I know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break and play my interview with Dave Feldberg. It was actually a lot of fun. Got some fun content in there from him. So we will take a break, talk with him, and then we'll come back and do some hot rounds. So we'll be back in just a moment here on PDGA Radio. All right, joining us on the program now is back-to-back Masters World Champion and 2008 Open World Champion, Mr. David Fellberg. Dave, how are you doing today? Congratulations.
Oh, great. Just got back home to Georgia. I'm doing great.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, so back-to-back championships, and this one was particularly dominant. I believe you led for all but two holes of the tournament. Is that correct?
Yeah, what I did was, you know, I heard a lot about the Swagger Notch courses, and I'd never been there, you know. So as I said, you know, on the PGA thing, I was somewhat scared when I saw, I mean, they have woods that are long holes with stakes everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I looked at the course the first time, and I went, wow, if you miss a couple shots here, you could put yourself right out of the tournament, you know. So I decided to play really conservative and play just for on the hard holes for the first time in my career. Instead of trying to blast the drive up to the three and deal with what I got, I actually played the landing zones and just played for pars on the really hard ones for the first part of the week. And that's why I was able to just, you know, kind of maintain at the top. And I thought if I just kept doing that, eventually, instead of me having to play world, you know, 1080 golf, I figured they would eliminate themselves slowly, because since they weren't winning, they were going to try to throw to those zones.
Sure.
That, you know, and, if you hit a tree up there and kick OB, instead of getting a three or four, you're getting a seven. You know, so I think that that's what happened. And then once I got comfortable and realized that it was down to one or two players that could push, then I was able to push without feeling like I was going to throw the whole tournament away.
That's a very, like, Masters level mindset. How long did it take you to kind of hone that kind of, because that takes some discipline, right? Would you have done that in your younger years?
No, and I wouldn't have done that the first year of Masters. That's why, you know, I did win some, but I lost some Masters tournaments because I went to the Masters field. I know this sounds weird, but I played both, you know. And when I played in Masters, yeah, I tended to try to play like an open player. And sure, when I did play like the open player that I'm capable of, I won very easily. But when I didn't and the shots didn't work, the guys who had played Masters, let's call it Masters, you know, smart golf, beat me. You know, and I was like, whoa, how did that happen? So I go home and I was like, well, I didn't really need to get those scores on those holes. I just needed to get pars on those holes and I would have won easily. So I think that I started to think about that, and I came with a mentality of what it took to win in that tournament, not just going, you know, to shoot my best I'm possible capable of. I know that sounds weird, but it's a formula for winning that I found, you know, you don't have to do more than you need to do.
So one of my questions was going to be, you know, which one of these two Masters world titles feels better to you? Is it, would that make it this one because it was a little more of a smart golf, or did the first one feel better?
The first one was special, you know, because I hadn't won one in a while and it was my first Masters and that was something I was really wanting to accomplish. I have this dream of being, you know, one of the first players, I think, to do a win in every age bracket.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's ever been done. And so that's always been my personal goal. And so I wanted to get that. So when I got that, it was Kansas City, which was like my first national tour win, my first, you know, amateur worlds final, all that stuff, right? So it felt, you know, a lot different. But this one, it was more like, I knew I could win. I went there to win, and I did. And then at the end, if you notice at the end, when I tap in my last putt, I'm not like screaming and jumping around like I did the first time. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, yes, you can do this. All right, keep going through it, do it, you know. That's kind of what it felt like it's like, I don't mean to be cocky to the other competitors because they're very good, and but like I should win. Like,
you,
hey,
you expected to win, and so you celebrated as such.
Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, without trying to be too cocky, I wanted to be humble to the other guys, but I just felt like with the new mixed bag, you know, I know no one's ever really won a world title in modern times on 40 over or open with mixed bag without a, you know, manufacturer sponsor.
Right.
And I knew that I had, you know, what shots that were, I was missing that they were making strokes on me. Now that I've added all the different discs to my bag, I have those shots back, you know?
Okay.
And so I think that that was a huge factor also for like, you know, there were certain holes, and nothing against other companies I played for, but there were certain holes I didn't have a disc for. And so I would just suck up a par, you know, where now it's like, oh, no, I have one for that. Let me throw that late flipping disc I had for 20 years I had in my closet. It works, you know.
Okay.
You know, so I think that that also played a factor where I knew when I had my last sponsor, I had to play world class best I could to win. But now with the, you know, having the full selection and arsenal of all the different shots I've learned in my career, I feel like I don't. I can just, you know, attack the course and it'll work out for me.
I was going to say, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up because I definitely plan to ask about the mixed bag. You know, I know you obviously you're known for carrying a lot of discs, so we probably don't need to go through everything. But what are you leaning on right now? What are you throwing the most, or what are your staples, if you will? And then maybe what are some of those ones that you added back that were really key?
You know, I don't play as much anymore. I mean, if you look, I've only played like 6 tournaments or
right
something this year. So I haven't had a chance to really break a lot of stuff in. All the companies have taken really good care of me. The 10 companies sponsoring Next Gen, and have all sent me a ton of discs to test and put in my bag. Really nice stuff. And many of its stuff's really good, but the level that I play, I have to put hyzer on stuff and ride it out, and I play different lines, you know? And so it was hard for me to add new stuff. So what I did was I kept some of the good Latitude stuff that I like a Bard, a Cenus, and a Triple X. And then I have one Ballista, I think, Pro in there too. And then basically I added in, for old stuff, I added all my old Innova stuff. Like the stuff, literally, I zipped my bag up the day I left Innova for Latitude. And when I left Latitude, I unzipped the bag. It hadn't been opened in 5 years. Same exact golf bag, the one that everybody knew I carried, the real long one. It was a long bag. Yep. And so I opened it up and they were in there. And so I didn't take the new ones out of there, but I picked all the old, like Destroyers and Eagles and Rocks and stuff like that, that was really broken in, that I could, you know, immediately take out and start throwing hyzer flips and stuff. And I was like, and I missed it. So I was like, oh, this is great. And then I was able to add my KC AVR and my Blackie, which was the, you know, the same putter I used since I was an amateur.
Okay.
And so my black jump putt really came back. You know, if you'll see in the videos, you know, early in the week, I was really making a lot of jump putts. And I think that's just because it has nothing to do with them being better. I tell this to people all the time. It has to do with familiarity. You know, that's the one I learned with. It was in my hand. Of course, my hand is perfectly fit on my grip to that one, you know. So, but as it comes to new discs that I've been adding to my bag that have helped me outside of those two brands that I've played for, I thought, you know, Costa Plasta, they have a disc called the Fall.
Yep.
F-A-L-K. One of the best fairway drivers I've ever thrown. You know, it immediately fit in my bag. And everybody I've, you know, let throw it when they play with me are like, whoa, that's not what I expected. You know, it's like that perfectly broken in red TL that everybody wanted for years that they couldn't afford because it was $200, you know. And then other stuff that I've been messing with is some Prodigy approach discs. They're really overstable. Some A2s that was really my wind approach. And then, you know, other stuff, I kind of messed around with the Legacy Ghost. I have been carrying, I think, is pretty nice. And then as it comes, you know, Discraft, I've been using the Zone quite a bit because it's like my new Cenus, kind of like, you know. But besides that, it's mostly older discs. If you looked at what I threw in the video, I threw a lot of discs that were made 20 years ago.
Do you kind of wish that you could have had the opportunity to throw a mixed bag earlier in your career?
Yeah, I do. Now that I see it, and especially now that there's 10 brands who are making quality discs. You know, 5-10 years ago when those brands hit the market, some of their stuff just wasn't at the level yet. You know, let's keep it real. But now with all the testing and different players have switched, many of the companies are making really high quality discs. You know, when they send them to me, I'm like, wow, that's really good. I'm being surprised one after another. And now having the ability to throw them all, you know, I think I threw away some titles. Let's just say that I was trying to promote a brand and I was trying to help them grow and build their brand and their company. And that being said, you know, I had to go through some learning pains with their discs, unfamiliarity, and them growing as making quality discs. So when I first switched, I was still number one or number two. And, you know, I had that year, I only lost to Macbeth by like 3 or 4 shots for the whole world championships to get second.
Right.
And I was playing with discs I didn't even know, you know, discs that I didn't have any hyzer flip game. My putting was not as good because I didn't have, you know, that long holding putt, you know. So I think that I definitely gave up some opportunity to show that what I'm really capable of by having to switch discs, you know, back then. But, you know, now that I can have them all, it's a big difference, you know. I mean, I'm not trying to be cocky, but if you look at how I played this year, besides one tournament, I think I've either won everything I played in, even A-tiers. The only thing I didn't play good in was Jonesboro. And that was just because I hadn't played much. We just had our baby. I go out to play. I came in. I was in like 15th, hanging tough, going, you know. And then that weather just came in, and I wasn't ready. And I just hadn't played enough to have that mental fortitude that it takes to stick through it. I was like, man, I haven't played this year. I wanted to go home instead of, you know, fight through it. You know, because I hadn't played much. So I was hoping that was going to be, you know, a sunny tournament. You know, when you only get to play one in the spring, you're like, hey. Let's hope it's going to be a good one. Instead, I go to one that's like the worst weather of the year. you know, and it just, you know, it cost me a 30th place finish, you know, which is, you know, not that great, but, you know, that also made me realize that if I'm going to go to a tournament, I showed up to that tournament the day before that night, you know, stuff like that. I'm going to have to at least show up a day early and, you know, go back to my, at least my pre-prep, which I used to do, which is like, check the weather, pack everything you need, like pack stuff that you would never use just in case you need it. You know, all those extra things that I used to do, you know, when I went to a tournament, I didn't really do for that one.
Right.
But it reminded me, hey, you better start doing that again if you want to compete with these kids, you know? So I think that when I look at the kids and the quality of the play and me using the mixed bag, there's certain courses I can't probably beat them on. I'm not going to deny that. There's a lot of ball golf courses that I see them playing that, you know, 600-foot drive means they're going to score. But I think that, you know, with the mixed bag, places like Augusta, Georgia, and Delaware and Maple Hill and those type of places, I think I'm going to be able to compete again with them, you know, at the top levels when I do show up.
Do you include Pro Worlds in that mix? I see you're signed up for Pro Worlds in Peoria.
Yeah, I'm on the fence. I withdrew from the rest of the summer events, and I'm not sure that I will be playing the Worlds. I'm signed up. I want to spend the whole summer with my family. You know, if it feels like my family wants to go, and they you know, comes around that time, then I'll probably play. But if not, I may not. And it's a shame because I heard they're using McNaughton, which if you look back at the Ledgestone I went to, I tied the course record.
Actually, you'd be playing, you would be in the open division, you'd be playing Northwoods and Ooh. Eureka.
Okay. Well, I think that those are both pretty good. You know, I think Ledge, you know, they don't reward the 600-foot throw over the 400-foot throw.
Right.
You know, so I think I would do good there, but it's the first year of the baby, and I've been playing for 20-some years. And, you know, some points you got to sit down and weigh your values. And I always wanted to have a baby, and I have a beautiful wife who is wonderful to me, and I need to give them the time that they deserve for standing by me through even the last 5 years so that if when I am older, they'll support me to play. But, you know, if I, you know, make things uncomfortable with the family or feel that make them feel abandoned because I just want to play, then I think that, you know, is not going to be good in the end for me or my family, you know. So
right.
I think that, you know, I'll be back. I think that I'm looking in the future Worlds. One that's got me excited is the Utah Worlds next year. I'm thinking that that's something I'm really going to focus in on, only because Jade Sewell has so much money. I know that Ledgestone has a lot of money and people talk about it, but Jade's got more. And Jade is going to, you know, those courses allow, you know, this, you know, you don't have to throw as far, and his Ford is like very wooded. So I'm looking to focus in on that in the Johnson City next year. But the last one tournament I will play in this year, I know it's another Masters, but the Selinski. I never won that. So I really, really, really want to go challenge for that.
Well, it's at Maple Hill, right?
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, speaking of you know, family and everything, how's fatherhood treating you so far? What are the big surprises or rewards or headaches? And just, you know, give me the rundown. How's it been so far for you?
Well, you know, I thought at first it was going to be something that I had to be doing all day, every day, and I should be there, you know. But I did that for the first month as she recovered. We did, like, split shifting, you know. But after that, she, you know, when she got on her feet and was going full speed, she wants to be with him 24 hours a day.
Right.
She's feeding him, like, 12 to 15 times a day, organic breastfeeding. And, you know, it's more like I can hold him and play with him for an hour while she's taking a shower, or maybe I can give her a nap here and there. But mostly my duties are, you know, cook some food here and there and do the laundry and make sure the grocery shopping's done and, you know, stuff like that, you know, which I don't mind. But I think it's really rewarding just seeing him grow and just seeing that that's your boy and watching him her take such good care of him. And, you know, he's like, he went from like under 10% and everything, you know, when they do that, when they're born.
Right.
And now he's in like 90, 75 and 2 and 92 and the other. You know, and it's all because of her, you know, care. You know, she's really on top of it and really taking good care of him. And I think that that's exciting. I'm in the rewarding part. And I know that what's coming soon is the working part. It's when they get a little older and I'm having to take them places and, you know, they're a handful and they're running around like crazy.
A little more mobile. Yeah, you're not going to sit down much.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity and that growing and that development of his brain. But right now I'm kind of in admiration mode and just kind of sitting back like, what can I do to help, you know? And that's how I feel. So I think that hopefully, you know, I can make her understand how important it is what she's doing and give back to her by not playing as many tournaments and coming, you know, being around. But it's an experience that I'll, you know, I love, and he's just always happy and smiley, you know, and it's almost like surreal because, you know, as a professional touring disc golfer, you know, a lot of us never really thought we were going to have families and kids. You know, we talked about it a lot of times around the campfire, you know, and the fact that I do now, you know, is just, it's almost like I wake up in the morning and I pinch myself. I'm like, is this real? I really do have a beautiful wife and a boy right here. Wow. You know, it's a dream that I didn't actually think I could get to and be a professional disc golfer, you know.
I love it. Now the other, obviously the other stuff you've been busy with is the Next Generation Tour.
Yeah.
You guys have made some pretty big changes this year. How's everything shaking out with that? Big stuff coming up for the championship later this year.
Yeah, I would say that it's shaking out pretty good. We're good. The attendance is up. I think, you know, our point system website that we're working on, it's had some kinks and getting the TDs used to it and stuff like that, you know, entering the statistics, which we'll get through, and, you know, hopefully they're willing to work with us and bear with us. But, you know, adding all the extra divisions, I think it's got people excited so they can compete. And this whole point system thing I like a lot better. It might take another year for people to understand that it's a point system now and not an invitation process. You know, because a lot of people, I'll talk to people about it and they'll be like, yeah, it's that latitude thing for an invitation for a car. And I'm
right.
Like, man, I just spent, you know, thousands upon getting that it's an every company thing now for cash, right? For everybody, not just one person, you know, and it just has, you know, the word of mouth in disc golf takes a little while, you know, so it took me 3 years for people to know it existed. And then with the change, it might take me 2 years to get them to realize, like, the concept now is play amateur, qualify for points. If you're below an advanced level player, we'll give you tons of prizes all year. You can win them online for free. Just sign up. It's all, you know. But if you're an advanced player, you got a chance to go to a national championship that's going to be $100,000. That's not a joke, you know. $50,000 in players' packages, which puts it above anything. And then $50,000 in cash payout, which, you know, 7,000 for first is projected, depending on the size of the fields,
wow,
how they fill up, right? And 1,000 for 20th in amateur. I mean, that's unheard of.
And then the point know? Being, and then, if they accept the cash, then they're moving to pro divisions, right?
They're moving to pro divisions, and if they, you know, they're top five, then they're going to get guaranteed spots in the pro tour and stuff like that. And, you know, hopefully the money that we're giving them gives them the opportunity to move forward. Because I'm going to be honest with you. I loved running the tournament. Cynthia loved running the tournaments. But we would sit there at the end, and the one kid who drove off in the car, boy, he looked like he won the lottery, right? His family and him, and he was always, they're always like, whoa, they couldn't believe it. They were almost spaced out. But the other kids looked like their puppies had been taken from them. You know, even though I gave them a nice bag of stuff and a, you know, certificate and a touring card and all this stuff, it just doesn't feel right when the other kid gets a brand new Jeep and you get, you know, some discs.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
We went to the drawing board, and I'm like, can we do this and make everybody happy? And I said, well, Andrew Cornwell is a good example. He's an up-and-coming pro. People are talking about him a lot. He got eighth, and I thought to myself, if Andrew Cornwell walked with $2,700 for eighth place instead of a stack of discs, boy, he would have been a lot happier. He would have been, like, stoked to have a chance to pay for all his entry fees for the next season, you know.
Right.
Stuff like that, so I think that, you know, that was our concept. And, you know, I know that it's against PDJ rules, but we found a small loophole that B tiers you can decline cash. So our championship, even though it's $100,000, is listed as a B tier.
Okay.
And that's just so we could have the ability for amateurs to decline.
Yeah.
Because I don't want
someone to give them, and then you give them the opportunity to kickstart their career if they do accept.
Right. And if they decline, let's say the guy wins 4,000 for fourth or something, or third, and he gets that 4,000, well, he can take baskets. I'll let him do that, or discs, you know, certificates. But, you know, if I don't do that, if I do A tier level, he would get nothing.
Right, right, okay.
You know, so I don't want to do that to people. So I think that that's the concept, is just to give people this bridge to not only get the experience of playing and the cameras and doing interviews on that we do and all that, which they said that was a great experience, but now also giving them what they need. Because that's all you could think about is over and over all, I spent all winter, what does a player need to turn pro? And the number one thing, if they have the skill, is money.
Yep.
So that's
very
what
cool.
I thought.
All right. So before I let you go, what we like to do is we like to hit people up with the lightning round. And,
okay.
Basically, I'm just going to give you a bunch of quick questions. I want you to give me first answer that pops into your head.
Okay.
All right, so let's do it. Favorite course on tour.
Favorite course on tour. Skellefteå.
Okay. Most difficult course on tour.
Jarva.
Okay, now this is my favorite question. Most overrated course on tour.
Wow, most overrated course on tour. God, that's a hard one. You know, I would say overrated. I don't want to do it. They're going to hate me, but I'm going to tell what I think. Santa Cruz.
All right. That's the second week in a row someone has said that, by the way.
Oh, okay. I don't feel so bad then. Okay.
You're not alone.
I just want to say real quick, the reason I said that is because we were like on the tour, the first people. And so all we heard about the first year, we didn't make it to the West Coast. Nobody did. So the second year we wanted to go to the West Coast, and all we heard about is how the Masters Cup tournament course was to be the best course we'd ever played. But we'd already traveled the U.S. and played really nice stuff, you know?
Right.
And when I got there, I was like, it's nice, but this isn't the best I've ever seen, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. All right, best food on tour. Like, what do you look forward to when you're out?
Best food on tour, steak and cheese.
Okay. If you were going to watch a sport or play a sport that wasn't disc golf, what's it going to be?
Basketball.
All right. You can pick one superpower and one superpower only.
I would choose vision.
Oh, okay. Like X-ray vision or like
X-ray vision? Yeah. X-ray. Supervision. Like I could see things, you know, hundreds of feet away.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. I like that one. Yeah. All right. You've been a disc golfer, professional disc golfer for so long, so I'm intrigued to ask you this question. What would you be doing if you weren't a pro disc golfer?
It's so funny. I think that I was going to be a computer programmer.
No kidding.
I went to school for computer programming language, COBOL, C++, Fortran, all that, when it was popular. And when I was about to graduate, I swear to you, what happened was the teacher took me in the office. She said, I saw your disc golf paper that you wrote, because I just started playing disc golf. And I had for my English class, I wrote a paper on disc golf that got published in the school paper. And she's like, I see your personality. I know you got good grades and you'll probably, you know, could get a job, but I don't think this is for you. She goes, I can't see you sitting in a cubicle for the rest of your life picking out little missing parts to language. And I was like, well, that's a good point. She's like, you know, highly considered. So I decided to listen to her and I, you know, chased the disc golf, and then I went back and got a degree in Japanese or whatever. But so yeah, I think I would have either been a computer programmer, or right when I graduated, before I won the worlds, I had an offer at JP Morgan in Japan. I had a backdoor opportunity, which you only get in from the Ivy League usually, but a guy I knew worked there, and he was going to get me onto the floor where I worked for a year and then took the test and could be a full trader.
Wow.
And I had the full offer. I even went to dinner with their company when I was there in Japan. And then literally I won the worlds. And all this stuff happened. And I was like, wow, I'm making enough money to live. Forget about it. But I was about to move to Japan and work as a trader.
No kidding.
Yeah.
See, I'm glad I asked that question then. All right. If you could have one dinner with one person, living or not living, who would that person be?
I would probably have it with Nostradamus.
All right. You're trapped on a desert island. You can only watch one movie for the rest of your life. What is it?
Oh, I can only watch one movie for the rest of my life. What is it? Shawshank Redemption.
All right. And the last one, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. All right. Well, Dave, thanks for taking some time out. I know you've been busy traveling everything after Masters Worlds, but it was a pleasure as always. And once again, congratulations on the victory.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you for all that you guys are doing. And for those of you thinking about going to Masters Worlds that aren't going, get your butt there to Johnson City, Tennessee next year, because, you know, Tim Barr runs a great show. And, you know, the bigger we can make it, the better it'll be.
Awesome. Well, once again, that was Mr. Dave Felberg. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, we're back. Thank you again to two-time world champion, Masters world champion, Dave Felberg. Sarah, we've got some hot rounds from over the weekend. And this will open up a window for us to maybe talk about a couple of the other events that were going on. There was some video coverage floating around out there from the weekend. So yeah. Would you care to start us off?
Yes. So most of mine were from different events.
Same here.
The fifth hottest rated round, Paige Pierce played in the King of the Hill event. And that was in,
Alaska. Yeah, she was posting some photos. Or no, I think maybe Alyssa was posting
Yeah. Tremendous. Oh, amazing. She shot a 970 her second round, and she ended up winning that by 5 strokes over Rebecca Cox. Ah, Rebecca Cox. She's going to get there one day. She's so close.
It's coming. Yeah.
All right. The fourth hottest rated round, Sarah Gilpin. She shot a 972, and that was her third round at the Titan Open 2019 presented by Discraft. And that was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. There's actually a pretty good women's field there as well. There's 7 women, and she finished in third place. So congratulations to Sarah.
Nice.
The next hottest rated round was another Sarah, but at a different event, Discraft CCR Open in Lansing, Michigan. Sarah Hokum, wow, huge women's field, 18 women. She shot a 973 her first round and ended up taking second place. The next was Christina Lithicum. She played in the 6th annual Crosstown Throwdown. Where was that one? That was in Temple, Texas, where she's from Texas. And she shot a 981 her first round, finished 7 down for the event, and finished in first place. And the next was Jessica Weiss. She shot a 991 at Discraft CCR Open. She finished 11 under for the event, going 956, 991, 987. And she won that event.
Nice. That's very awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her and Double G took that one down. We were talking just the other week about Paul and Hannah winning the same event. And Jessica Weiss and Garrett Gerthy taking down that one. We'll talk CCR Open a little more in a minute because. At least video wise, it was pretty wild. But let's do the men's hot rounds or the MPO hot rounds. So first up on the list with a 10:55 rated second round at the Titan Open. This was up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It was Adam Hamas. He ended up actually dropping a ninth, a little bit of a struggle bus on the final round. But that was our first hot round with a 10:65 rated round at that was his final round actually. At the CCR Open, it was Garrett Gerthy taking that one down. He was down 4 strokes to Paul McBeth after the first 2 holes of the final round and shot 3 eagles, went like 12 down over 9 holes.
Ridiculous.
Insane. Insane stuff. Go watch it on Jomez. Congrats, Double G. Big season for Double G so far.
Yeah, he's doing really well.
Yeah, he really is. Bouncing back over to the Titan Open, it was Luke Humphreys with a 10:66 rated second round. He came in a tie for 6th place, also shot a 10:60 in there in the final round. Very nicely done from Luke. Let's see here. At the Make It Rain Massacre, driven by Innova. That's a good one.
I like it. That is a good one.
This is up in American Falls, Idaho. Dallin Blanchard shot a 10:72 rated opening round to win that tournament. So nicely done, Dallin Blanchard. Then we've got the Spike Heiser's Tar River Roundup 8. Took me a second to do my Roman numerals there. Brian McCree shot a 10:77 rated opening round to win that one. That was a seed here over in Franklinton, North Carolina. And then our last two come from a final 9. Over at a C tier in Sweden. This is the all round disc golf championships. And we had Simon Kapling and Richard Kapling.
Brothers?
Both, I'm guessing brothers or maybe cousins. I don't know. Both shooting 10.99 rated final 9s.
Amazing.
And it looks like Richard ended up winning.
Ah, go Richard.
I hope they're brothers. That's great. So, wow, 10.99. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Sarah, let's talk CCR Open real quick. Did you happen to catch any of the coverage of that yet?
I watched most of the first round.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my impression of Garrett Gerthy. I'll do it verbally because this isn't a video podcast. I'm just going to throw over all of the things.
Yes. That course is perfect for it.
Yeah, except, I mean, that was at the same spot that they did U.S. Women's last year, Renegades Trail up in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it was a long course. I will say all the eagles he got, there were some soft par fives.
Yeah. So who did that? So Brian Earhart and
Chandler Fry
did the commentary, and they were like, you know, the average score for this par five is like a 3 point. I don't know, remember what they said exactly, but like a 3.8. So, you know, it's kind of a par four. It's kind of soft, but whatever. Yeah. But the thing about that course though, it looks like, yes, you can throw over all the things, but also the rough looks terrible.
Oh yeah, if you get off the fairway there, they were big fairways, but anytime that you were off the fairway, you were struggling. I think they were talking about there was poison oak and stuff too.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing was, I forget who it was, but you know, one of them would throw and they'd be like, oh no, that's probably not what he meant to do, and then Brian would be like, oh well, he's fine over there. So there are definite fairways that are kind of wide open that,
yeah, you can make some mistakes.
Yeah, you can make mistakes and you've got some buffer.
I mean, look, Double G hit some really big putts down the stretch, and you know, obviously we know he can throw a mile, and it's one of those things where, man, I would love to see him, especially after the season you've had so far, I'd love to see him be a contender at Worlds and absolutely just be able to kind of keep it between the lines there and get the putter rolling hot. And yeah, a fun tournament to watch. Some of the holes to me kind of ran together a little bit, and I think honestly I don't think it's a knock on the course design. I think it's literally just because everything is so green there.
Oh
that
yeah,
it was just like I'm just watching green the whole time.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
No, I don't either. And it was cool to see some different players. I really enjoyed the first round. You had two lefties on the card with Brian Earhart and Reed Vascura.
Yeah,
that was fun for me personally to watch. We got to see Sam Merdeza, who is been a big college player the last few years. He made the final round lead card. So it was cool to see someone on coverage who maybe people have paid attention to the college scene, but yeah, you know, we don't get a lot of college video to see. So it was cool. It was a fun tournament. It's been nice to have Jomez going to some of these events that, you know, maybe they wouldn't have gone to in the past. It's been nice to see a couple different tournaments get some coverage. So pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, if you close your eyes and listen to Brian Earhart, sounds a little bit like a young Dave Fellberg, I think.
Really?
I think so. Try it next time.
Let's talk to Dave Fellberg.
No, I was thinking this last night before I even talked to Dave Fellberg.
Interesting.
They have like a similar cadence, I feel like. Huh. Yeah.
I'm not sure I've heard Dave Fellberg speak for long periods of time, but I'll have to listen to his interview.
Yeah, right. I know you didn't get to hop on that one this week.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all good. Busy times. Speaking of busy times, Sarah, we are going to take a brief vacation next week for busy times. So we will not have an episode of PDJ Radio next week. We will return the week of the 15th. And Sarah, I will be chiming in with you from Finland.
Yeah.
Ahead of the European Open. So looking forward to that, but we'll be off next week. So good luck to all of our competitors at Junior Worlds. Oh, I guess we got to call it D-Glow though, huh? I'm trying to get out of here on this show before talking about Discraft Great Lakes Open this weekend. We better give a shout out to that.
Yeah, and we should also go over the points and also make picks for D-Glow.
Well, fine, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I understand why you wouldn't.
No, D-Glow is this weekend. I forgot. And it came after 4th of July last year. We had all the, you know, fireworks analogies because Paul McBeth shooting 18 under par. Sarah, again, does not think he's going to do that again. It'd be kind of cool if he did. Actually, Paul, don't do it again, please. I'm going to be out of the country. Like, I just...
You'll get to watch
it. I won't be able to cover it. I can watch it on some coverage.
Yeah.
Paul, if you're going to shoot 18 down again, just go 19 this time. Just go even bigger.
I wonder when Paul listens to these episodes. Is it before?
I have literally walked by Paul while he's practicing for an event on the course while he's listening to it.
Oh my gosh.
Well, and he's like, hey, you got this thing wrong. You got my feature card wrong. I was like, sorry, they changed it.
Okay, well, now I feel terrible.
So Paul's
not like my prophecy is going to affect.
Paul's probably practicing while he listens to this. I think maybe we're assuming too much that he listens every week.
He's pretending that my face is in the basket. I'm just kidding. I'm giving myself way too much credit.
I think we both are. So I think we both are. All right. So Great Lakes Open is Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Toboggan, which we just saw recently for US AMs. It's now on the Pro Tour. We know it from last year with Paul McBeth going super large. Also, the Willie Prince coming out party last year, if we remember him shooting a very similarly hot round. Nico LaCastro had a really strong showing at this tournament last year. Really nice. Just this is a, you know, it's you're gonna see some nice downhill bombs, some elevation.
That course is beautiful.
Yeah, a lot. Again, really we were just talking about green, a lot of green. So I think it'll be fun. You can see all the coverage through the usual Disc Golf Pro Tour channels. That would be the DGPT YouTube channel. And everything like that. And I feel like I'm actually looking right now on the Disc Golf Pro Tour website, though, Sarah. I don't think Jomez is at this one. I believe the post-production for this one is going to be Central Coast.
Okay.
However, it's not currently on the schedule. Let's see. Oh, wait. I think I found it. It's just hiding. They didn't bump this to the front page yet. Nope.
Yeah,
they just the next day now. Edited. They haven't updated yet. So I would just advise that if you are looking for the coverage later this week to go to dgpt.com. They should hopefully have it updated for us later. But I think this was one of the ones that surprisingly Jomez was not going to be at.
Okay.
I want to say this is a Central Coast on league card. But I don't quote me on that. And just, you know, you can find it. Disc Golf, YouTube, it's easy, people. And you'll know that they're going to be on the Disc Golf Pro Tour YouTube channel with the live coverage, MPO, FPO, every day. Sarah, what do you... Yeah, and what do you think we need to know about this course, other than what we've talked about with the elevation and everything like that?
I think it's probably kind of a lot what we just talked about with Worlds, like a lot of placement shots. With all this elevation, there can be a lot of skippy greens, skippy grass, and I think one of the best things to have in your bag is knowing speed control, and knowing and knowing when to throw something a little bit slower when you're throwing up or downhill, to make sure that you're not, because you might have a beautiful shot and then hit a green and skip out of bounds or something, or skip in the rough.
Now that's one thing about this course that I do recall hearing earlier this year, they were going to be adding some OB to it, because from what I remember last year, there wasn't a lot of,
because of Paul McBeth's 18
bounds. Well, I mean, there wasn't a lot of OB. It was, I don't think there was really much at all. So I unfortunately we don't have any course information in front of us at the moment. The Pro Tour website wasn't queued up quite yet, but
there's lots of coverage from last year.
Yeah, but like, I think they were going to be adding some like artificial OB. I think they're going to be adding some rope this year.
Cool. I think that's we'll a good see. Move.
Yeah, and then but you're talking about speed control. I think that's one of the more underrated skills that McBeth has. It's kind of why he's been able to normally play so well at like De La, because
all that compacted
ground control for sure, and he's very good at that, so I won't be surprised to see him play well there again. So all right, well, how are we doing in the picks, and whose turn is it?
Well,
I think it's your turn to go first.
It's my turn.
Yeah,
we didn't go over the ledge stone, but basically you got 2 points for Beth at Ledgestone, 1 point for Paige Pierce, and I got zero. Did I just get zero for everything?
Yes.
Apparently, I did.
Sweet, I needed that.
But somehow, I'm still winning by 5 points.
Yeah, well, it's going to change after this weekend.
Okay, we'll see. But I also get to pick first, so...
Still not going to matter.
Okay, whatever. All
right. Now, I will say, it is interesting, though, looking at the field for this weekend, it is a little shallower. There are quite a few people already over in Europe. Kind of, we had the Toonie from last weekend, which we didn't talk about, but Eagle McMahon won that. His shoulder seems to be fine. And then Kristen Tatar, first event this year that she has not won. So that was kind of interesting. Jenny Eskelinen won that one.
By one stroke, I think.
Pretty yeah, it was a close, close one. One yeah. or two. So, you know, 134 players in the open division, but missing a few of the big dogs. No Ricky Wysocki, no Eagle McMahon, you know, no Nate Sexton, no Jeremy Colling. So there's a few names in there that we're kind of missing this week. So that may kind of upset the balance of the picks. And then on the FPO side, we've got 35 women, which is awesome, dude. The Pro Tour always has such big women's fields, and almost all of the FPO top competitors here. We've got Katrina Page, Sarah Hokum, Other Page. Shouldn't call her Other Page, but I don't like calling her Little Page either. World champion, current world champion, Paige Bierkus.
Exactly.
Jessica Weiss, Rebecca Cox, Madison Walker. Pretty stacked women's field.
Yeah.
So with that out of the way, Sarah,
you're just trying to shake me. I know what you're doing.
No, I was just trying to give the people an idea of who was playing this event. Okay. So now you can make your all picks.
Right. All right. Well,
but I'm in your head though, so I'll take it.
You wish. I'm going to go Paul Macbeth.
Wow. Really thinking outside the box.
Big surprise. I know.
Well, then you know what? I'm going to go. Can it happen 2 weeks in a row? Can Garrett Gerthy take down Paul Macbeth 2 weeks in a row? Find out this weekend watching the Disc Golf Pro Tour. He's my pick.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go top five. I'm going to go. Oh, Johnny McRae's playing this too. Interesting. I'm going to go Kevin Jones.
All righty. Then I am going to go with Nicola Castro, following up on last year's strong performance there.
I was considering that.
Yeah. Nice. All right. What about FPO?
Let's see. I think Katrina Allen took a week off.
Yeah. From what I know, she was going to just hang at home.
Yeah.
Chill out with some friends.
I feel like, I mean, she's killing it this year, clearly, but I feel like she's probably powering up a little bit at home, so I feel good about her at this event, so I'm going Katrina Allen.
Okay, going Katrina Allen. Now, there's something to be said for Paige Pierce having gone all the way up to Alaska and back down to Michigan now.
It sounds very tiring.
That's something to be said for that, is that Paige Pierce will have none of your tiredness, and she will just drink coffee, and she will win this event.
And she'll have no sleep, and she's still in her 20s. She'll be fine.
Yeah, I got Paige.
Okay. All right, top five. Well, Sarah Hokum won here last year.
Yep.
Therefore, I think that's probably a good pick for top five this year.
All right. I'm going to go with your favorite, Rebecca Cox.
Nice. All right.
So once again, Disc Golf Pro Tour this weekend, Discraft Great Lakes Open. You can check it all out on the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel, and you know, keep an eye out for more. There'll be coverage popping out on social media and stuff like that, so you can be covered. Okay. So now, Sarah, I think we can say good luck to our Junior Worlds competitors next week. Apologize that we will not have a show next week, but sometimes we need to go on vacations out of the country, and
you do.
I'm crossing off serious bucket list item. I get to go see the Tour de France in person, and I could not be more stoked. So,
well, I think you had to do some solo shows for me last year when I was in France. So
there you go. Exactly. So we'll take a break, and then we will come back with European Open coverage, the following week, and be back on track. So, Sarah, au revoir, right? Isn't that how you say goodbye in French? I have not been learning any French. I'm relying on my wife for a lot of the translations.
Oh, so nice. I took 10 years of French.
All right.
Am I good at it? No. But I could get by when I was there. Barely.
That's all you need, right? So anyway, yeah. until next time, this was PDGA Radio. Give us some feedback, radio@pdga.com. And for Sarah Lamerson, I'm Steve Hill. Be good to each other, and we'll catch you in a couple weeks.